Andrew, who is job shadowing me today, and he's seated right over by Barbara, and he's from Heritage Christian School here in Salem, and he's going to spend the morning and part of the afternoon with me today. So folks can go meet Andrew and welcome him to the Capitol if you get a chance. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 341. Dr. Ayala.
Thank you. Senate Bill 341 will enable a city that is located within an urban growth boundary and was incorporated after 1990 to issue an 18-month obligation in anticipation of tax revenues or other income prior to the beginning of the fiscal year in which the city expects to receive those revenues. The obligations may not exceed 80% of the lawfully available funds that the city reasonably expects to receive, and the anticipated revenues used to retire the obligations may not include grant income. I'll give you some background on this particular bill, because under current law, cities aren't able to issue what's called a tax anticipation bond at the beginning of a fiscal year when they know certain revenues are going to arrive, or a very good estimate of what's going to arrive, and it's sort of a short-term financing tool, but they must repay the debt obligation within the same fiscal year. Well, there's one instance where this doesn't work very well, and that's with a particular city of Damascus, which is the only city that's been incorporated since 1990. It is within an urban growth boundary, but it was so recently incorporated that there's this period of time where it will not receive any monies for the next, let's say, 18 months. So right now, the created city of Damascus has no funding at all, but it's trying to operate without funds. So this particular bill would sort of extend that financing tool that are similar to a tax anticipation note. It just extends that window of time to repay the debt to the next fiscal year. But it has to have a fairly good estimate of what its revenues will be when coming in. To date, no other cities have incorporated since 1990. But I do want to note that the Senate bill will enable a new city in the future to do the same thing. So There's no provision, in other words, to lock this bill into just one city. It would be other cities would be able to benefit too. Okay. Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Harstock, Mr. Westcott, Ms. Deister.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities, and it is my great pleasure to introduce the mayor and the mayor pro tem of Oregon's newest city, the city of Damascus. And actually, the newest city prior to them was Kaiser, and they had incorporated in the early 1980s. So I'm really here in my official capacity as cheerleader. We're very pleased that you heard this bill. You'll notice that there is an emergency clause on it because these folks have costs associated with their incorporation that are coming due now, and as staff noted, they don't have a funding mechanism to take care of those. So I'm going to turn it over to the mayor and the mayor pro tem to talk to you a little bit about this bill. Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Dee Westcott. I live at 19580 Southeast Sunnyside Road, and actually you can get to me at Damascus, but it's a boring address. I'd like to give a little history of how we got here and so forth on a little bit about Damascus Incorporation. We incorporated on a bill that was passed in 1999 that allowed rural commercial centers that were designated as such by the county to incorporate as long as they were outside the urban growth boundary. It also had a provision in the bill that allowed us to put a statement of intent in there to form a city and do a feasibility study for doing a city, which would allow us to incorporate even after the urban growth boundary moved. that then required that we make agreements with all of the cities around us that that was feasible. So we did that on a two-year session of meeting with the cities and all the service providers to determine exactly where the boundaries for incorporation would be, and went to a vote of the people on November 2nd, had a 92% turnout of voters within the district, and passed it with a 65% majority. And that was including a $3.88 tax limit, I mean tax approval. Also at the same time, they passed Measure 37 with a 3-to-1 margin, which leaves us not knowing exactly what the message is. But what happened with the law then was that we didn't realize that there is absolutely no funding provisions for it. So that's why we're coming to you, is to ask for some sort of funding provisions to help us out with getting the city started. With that, I'll turn it over to John.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Excuse me. My name is John Hartsock. I'm the mayor pro tem of Damascus. I live at 18510 Southeast Vogel Road in Damascus. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today to support Senate Bill 341, whose prompt passage is really pretty critical to moving forward. As Dee said, we had, and quite frankly to our committee, which spent 3 years meeting weekly to work on this issue before we took it to the people. We're very concerned of would we be able to pass it, and we were very pleased with the high rating and the whole issue. Our whole message was local control, be able to manage this area. This 12,000 acres was brought into the urban growth boundary in Metro's 2002 decision, and it was brought in specifically with the issue of creating a new city. And so the bill that Mayor Westcott spoke of that helped us do this, avoiding the three-mile veto issue, and Metro's very, very strong support and has worked with us very closely and helped us through this issue, and I can't say enough for their support. We're the first new city in 22 years. And the new city council, we worked together, as I say, putting this together for the last 3 years, has really stepped up to the plate. And there's a lot of challenges with a new city. Here we are with a tax base, $3.88 over the assessed value, gives us a little over $2 million. We have 10,000 citizens to deal with, which, of course, started calling day one. But we have no phone and we have no office. Now, we've been advised by a lot of local governments that we probably ought to keep it that way. But we've decided we probably should move forward. We can't, as staff has explained, we can't levy taxes until July till we do our first full budget. Revenue does not require a new city in this partial year to do a formal budget, so at least that's clear in the law that we don't have to go through that process. We do in July, and we're getting ready to do that. And then, of course, in July, we can do tax anticipation notes. The problem is this first 6 months, and it'll be a problem for any city that's formed. And I suppose when that piece of legislation was written, $5,000 was a lot of money. But the first bill that we received was from the county for $8,000 to do the survey to develop the boundaries of the city. And then, of course, we got one from elections, which was a couple of thousand dollars. It's obvious that you need insurance, so that was another bill of $5,000. There's going to be a lot of legal work. We've spent about $14,000 to date. Fortunately, all of these vendors, city, county insurance, the county, Jordan Schrader, who is our law firm, have all agreed to do this on a contingency for the time being, as has Steve Rhodes, who is our city manager, which we're a little embarrassed with that, but we certainly would like to pay them. We've done a budget, the council's approved a budget of $350,000, which will carry us through this first 6 months. And also in the middle of this, we're in the midst of starting to put together our comprehensive plan for this 12,000 acres. So, again, part of a project with the county and Metro to do a concept plan and then a comp plan, so there's a lot of planning work going on, and of course people are very anxious about what can I do with my property. We've been fortunate. We have not seen any major 37 claims to date, because I think for the most part people see that there's going to be growth out there, and it'll get better with the planning that we're doing. We do have the debt limitation. We do need to be able to use tax anticipation notes. So the introduction of Senate Bill 341 really modifies ORS 288-165 to provide this great new city and any other city in the future the ability to operate in this first 6 months. We really appreciate your looking at this and would ask that you do pass it and that we move it as an emergency measure so that we can start to really operate the city.
Thank you. Congratulations once again on your recent success in Clackamas County. Questions or comments for the panel?
I was just wondering, Mr. Chair, if there's ever been a city that was created with those bills and immediately got incorporated and got foreclosed on at the same time.
Well, we're doing this big amnesty. You know, we could offer amnesty to the city of Damascus.
I see, Mr. Chair, that Representative Flores has joined us. And,
I have one question, and then we're going to get right to Representative Flores. But I want to ask the panel, and Representative Flores, please come up. You may want to weigh in on this question. So you mentioned in your statement, and it's the one thing that I guess sticks in the back of my mind with this bill, because it's a good bill and it's needed and the TANs need to happen and you need to get up and running. The only concern that I have is that we have these, and I'm just thinking in the metro region, not statewide, but we have these 190,000 citizens that are living in unincorporated areas that in the House there's legislation to allow these smaller cities to start sprouting up. And so my concern is are we making it easier? And this legislation, like I said, is needed. But I guess it's just the free-floating concern that I have is that we do this, we pass this bill that is in the House, and we've really provided a path for at least would be counter to what my wishes would be, which is we have several new small cities, many of them, that kind of sprout up at least in the three-county metro region. And I don't know if you care to comment on those, or Representative Flores, if you can say you can defeat that bill in the House.
I haven't thoroughly read the bill in the House to understand which parts of ORS 221 are being changed to allow that. But as Mayor Westcott explained, we were limited by the 3-mile. You are generally limited by the 3-mile veto, which means any city adjacent within 3 miles has the ability to say no. The way the legislation was restructured for Damascus, in essence, is being outside and then being brought in, we still had to have a hearing in front of the county commissioners to hear the issue, but then they ruled on whether it was in fact appropriate or not appropriate to do the city. So those two pieces, the 3-mile and then, as I say, the county court hearing it, I think pretty well protects the issue from the small, and I, you know, are you talking about a Johnson City type of thing that's just trying to avoid versus something the size of Damascus that makes a lot of sense to be a city because of the size and its ability to fund and do its operation. So I haven't read the bill in the House, but I think the protections are there, and this doesn't change any of that.
Mm-hmm. I was heartened to hear the 3-year process in your testimony, the 3-year process and the due diligence that went into the, you know, filing to become a city. Representative Flores.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, I am Linda Flores, State Representative for House District 51, which includes Clackamas, Boring, Estacada, a little bit of Multnomah County, and now the newest city in the state of Oregon, Damascus. But I think Randy Tucker from Metro did you want to address the point that was raised?
Only if you wanted a little bit further explanation of the existing statutes that prevent what Randy Tucker, Metro, by the way, that prevent what you're talking about from happening. Mr. Chair.
I would love to hear the brief answer in the statute. And I know that these are all under examination in the House Land Use Committee, but would...
Right, and I actually don't, you know, barring anything happening in this session, the scenario that you described is currently not possible without the consent of, in Washington County, without the consent of, I assume, Beaverton, Portland, Hillsborough, et cetera. ORS 221.010 and 221.031 are where those prohibitions are. Basically, any city, 221.010 defines an urbanized area as territory within 3 miles of a city. And then in the process for incorporating, for petitioning on the creation of a new city, which is described in 221.031, if any of the area proposed to be incorporated is an urbanized area, which is within 3 miles of an existing city, then you have to attach to your petitions either resolutions from all cities within 3 miles approving the incorporation, or an affidavit saying that all of those cities did not act within 120 days of filing the petition. So if any of those cities object, it can't happen under current law. So I wanted to give you the statutory references.
My concern is that current law might be changed, but that's a House debate right now that I hope everyone's fully engaged in. Though, like I said, this is important legislation for the city of Damascus.
Well, and your concerns are duly noted, Mr. Chair. We will be talking about it, I'm sure, significantly. And if I just might indulge the committee for just a moment, I would just like to encourage your unanimous support for this bill. These folks have gone through an arduous process, very long-term process, and at their installation ceremony, I likened it to a birthing process. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of labor, very labor-intensive. And with another analogy, they have done everything. They've used all the tools very capably available to them, but at this point they feel perhaps like they do not have the hammer or the nails to complete that building. And this bill would allow them to make that happen. And with the expression of local control that the citizens of that area widely supported, not only to create this city, but to impose a new tax upon themselves, I just hope that you will support this effort for them.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Flores? Thank you very much. Again, congratulations, and I think you're going to be on your way here to getting your tans soon.
Thank you.
Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 341 and open a work session on Senate Bill 341.
Chair Deckard.
Senator Starr.
I move Senate Bill 341 to the floor for the pass recommendations.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 341 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections to that motion? So ordered. And Senator Metzger, if you'd be willing to carry Damascus's bill, air, water.
Happy to do that. And, Mr. Chair, I would just point out that Senator Decker and I have already talked about this, that we anticipate very soon that Mayor Westcott and Mayor Drake will be getting together to discuss whether it's Beaverton or Damascus who will then annex the city of Portland. But that's discussion for a future day.
Make it quite a battle. I'll tell you, Beaverton has a leg up on you on this one. But we've gotten one bill passed, which is close that work session. Congratulations. You're on your way. And we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 283. Dr. Ayala.
Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 238 enables a limited liability corporation, actually, to qualify for property tax exemption or special assessment if it is wholly owned by one or more nonprofit corporations, and the property would qualify for the exemption or special assessment if directly owned by the nonprofit corporation. Under current law, some types of nonprofit corporations qualify for a property tax exemption. However, others may not. Public benefit nonprofits must report to the Department of Justice, and this year there were 12,000 of them, roughly. And these are the nonprofit corporations that generally are exempt already from property tax. These are what I think are the entities that would like to be able to shift some of their riskier assets into another entity for risk adverse purposes. So those are the ones that might do this if the legislature grants them that. The problem we're having right now is with data collection. But I'll get to that in a minute. We don't know actually how many public benefits, nonprofits, have currently perhaps created LLCs in which they put these risky assets. But we do know that if they did this, they lose their exemption. That's current law. So all this bill is trying to say is, let us have the exemption as if we put our assets into this other vehicle as opposed to losing it by putting it there. Okay. The only problem we're having right now with this bill is trying to disaggregate the data that's coming to the Department of Revenue, and I don't know how we're going to approach that yet. We may have to do a name search or a word search, but we've been discussing it. And I don't really think that there's that much involved, but the problem is there are actually roughly 17,000 nonprofits. Only 12,000 of them have to report to the Department of Justice because they're public benefit. You've got these other mutual benefit nonprofits. Maybe it's a motorcycle club. Now, these entities don't have current exemptions, so they're paying, or they should be paying, property taxes. So what we've got to do is try to find out in the database, if it's possible, to find out, extract the companies that are currently paying tax, and they're not going to be affected by this bill, to pull out those few companies, if any, that are nonprofit public benefit corporations that want this exemption. And that's where we are, sir, Mr. Chair.
Well put. a simple bill with hopefully, although I think this is one we're just going to hear today and probably wait on, but certainly one that I know, we'll call up Mr. William Mann, who I know has done quite a bit of work on this issue.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is William Manny. I'm appearing today on behalf of the Oregon State Bar Tax Section in support of Senate Bill 283. The tax section has over 400 members in the state of Oregon that serve small and large businesses, and a lot of our members serve charitable entities either on a pro bono basis or for fees. I'm going to depart a bit from my written testimony, tell you how this came before me. In my representation of nonprofit corporations that qualify for property tax exemption, and I agree with legislative staff that those would generally be public benefit corporations that are doing charitable work and qualify under ORS 307 for property tax exemption, there is often a call for the creation of subsidiary organizations. So right now, if a charity calls me up, and in the case, this is an actual case that brought this to my attention, a charity bought some real property and was going to use it for exempt purposes. And consistent with what business and tax lawyers typically do today, the decision was made to put the real property into a separate entity, so it was not in the larger parent entity. And that isolates liabilities that may occur in connection with the real property and creates a separate entity to hold the real property. And that's very common practice both in the nonprofit world and the for-profit world. And they created a limited liability company to hold this property. So the charity created a 100% owned by it limited liability company to hold property that should qualify for exemption under ORS 307. And went about the business of creating the rest of the enterprise that was going to be housed in the limited liability company, applied for property tax exemption in the county, and got a letter back saying, I'm sorry, it's an LLC. You can't get property tax exemption because Oregon ORS 307 says you have to be a corporation, a nonprofit corporation. So they came to me, they asked, is that right? I said, yes, that's right. And we proceeded to spend a lot of time and money converting the limited liability company into a nonprofit corporation, which was perfectly something we were perfectly able to do under law, and you can do under law now, went back to the county assessor and said, we'd like to apply for property tax exemption. The county assessor said, okay, property tax exemption is granted because you're using the property for an exempt purpose, and it's now housed in a nonprofit corporation. The chronology of these laws is that ORS 307 was formulated long before our limited liability statutes, which came into being in 1993. Since 1993, limited liability companies have become the entity of choice for owning real property, again, both inside and outside the nonprofit world. What we have right now is a situation where corporations can accomplish virtually public benefit nonprofit corporations can form nonprofit corporate subsidiaries and qualify for property tax exemption if the property otherwise qualifies, but they can't form an LLC and qualify for property tax exemption. So all we are trying to do is give them another choice of entity, which most business and tax lawyers will tell you is the favored choice of entity for owning real property. We believe the bill should be completely revenue neutral because it does not allow anyone to do anything they can't do now but for use a different form, use a different corporate form, if you will. So right now, again, nonprofit corporations can form subsidiaries. If the property qualifies for exemption, they will get exemption because it's in a nonprofit corporation. They simply can't use the LLC form. And we would like to see them be able to use the LLC form. It is favorable for a number of reasons, not the least of which is ease of reporting and ease of administration, which reduces the costs for these public benefit charities and is a more efficient form and structure for them to own the property. And that's why we often recommend that structure.
Thank you.
Dr. Ayala, do you agree it's revenue neutral?
I think that there is I cannot say at this point because we're trying to search through the data. And what I had said earlier to the gentleman here was that some entities may have created LLCs before this current law and have had to pay taxes and may be waiting sort of on the side. So therefore, if we sifted through the data, if this were a perfect world and I could sift through the data and find those entities, mm-hmm. well, then that's the revenue impact and it may be negligible. Mm-hmm. And I was just, I'm not sure about if I understood you correctly, but you said that it's possible to take the LLC, and if the land, let's say, in your exempt scenario, if the land is put into the LLC and designated as a nonprofit LLC, well, then it's exempt. Is that what you said?
No. You can't, in our state, you can't designate a nonprofit as an LLC.
Okay.
Let me digress for a moment, but I think it will make sense. Federal law has also been grappling with LLCs, and not too long ago, federal law was changed, and the state follows this for income tax purposes, that if an individual or an entity owns all of a limited liability company, it becomes what's called a disregarded entity for tax purposes. That means you do not have to file a separate set of tax returns for the LLC. You report everything as if you owned it yourself. Another difference between LLCs and corporations is corporations require boards, they require shareholders, they require regular meetings, they require corporate governance. Our LLC statutes do not require regular corporate governance. So owning anything inside a limited liability company, if it's appropriate, is much easier than owning something within corporate form. And my view is that no knowing Oregon charity that had property or has property that would qualify for property tax exemption would have put it in a separate entity in LLC form and foregone their tax exemption. They would have used a corporation under our current law and retained their property tax exemption. And even if there is out there, let's say I'm proven I'm proven wrong this afternoon, and a charity calls me and says, you know, we have this property inside a limited liability company, and we're told we can't get a property tax exemption, and we could otherwise get a property tax exemption if it was inside a nonprofit corporation, it would be a very simple matter to transfer that property, to dissolve the LLC and transfer that property to a nonprofit corporation, or if you will, even turn the LLC into a nonprofit corporation and qualify it for exemption. So again, I don't think, well, I know we are not proposing a bill that changes in any respect whether and when property can qualify for property tax exemption. Our intention is simply to give charitable entities in this state the opportunity to use the LLC form for doing that because it's a better form.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that it's relatively common, and it seems to, with nonprofits, and I'm just searching my brief knowledge of the nonprofits I'm familiar with, it seems to be somewhat sophisticated for a nonprofit to take its real property, but I could be way off on that. Do you have an estimate of how sophisticated does the nonprofit have to be to utilize the LLC form or the other form that that you're proposing?
They're generally going to be pretty sophisticated. This is going to be larger charities that have sophisticated boards and outside counsel. Where we use it a lot is, and you know, the idea of isolating real property when you purchase it in a separate entity really gained a lot of popularity when the environmental laws got passed. Because all of us, if we purchase a piece of property, let's say I purchase a piece of property for $10,000 out in Central Oregon, and I decide it's not worth it to see if it's got an environmental problem, and it turns out it has a significant environmental problem, both the state DEQ and the federal laws would permit the federal government and or the state government to require me to pay all kinds of funds to clean that up. And the fact that I paid $10,000 for the property doesn't set a limit of $10,000. So for charities, this is a very dangerous scenario, particularly when people leave them property. And so we have started to recommend often that charitable gifts of property come in the form of an enterprise rather than a direct interest in the real property. But again, it's the purpose to which the property is put to use by the charity that distinguishes whether it qualifies for exemption or not. And so if a charity owns property that does not otherwise qualify for exemption now in a separate entity, or even if it were to own it itself, this bill is not going to permit it to qualify for exemption. Property only qualifies for property tax exemption when it's owned by a charity if it's being used for charitable purposes. And that's still the test. So that test is not being modified in the least.
And does an example come to mind? I'm now getting a better sense because I'm thinking of a direct example, but I don't know, Mr. Manning, if one comes to mind for you of where this would be applicable.
Well, I did have a case where a charity with some rather sophisticated folks on its board decided to open a thrift store. And a thrift store qualifies for property tax exemption if it's properly structured under our statutes. And they formed an LLC because that's the typical thing that you do for real property. So this was a very sophisticated former colleague of mine, really, who was on this board who said, well, we should put in an LLC. And they went forward with this whole thing, created this entity, bought the property, did all of this, went for property tax exemption, were told, sorry, no property tax exemption, it's not a nonprofit corporation. Came to me, I said, that's right. What should we do about it? Well, simply change it into a nonprofit corporation, which is what we did. So it's becoming popular in general to hold property in separate entities for larger, more sophisticated charities that have real property holdings and a variety of real property holdings. I think it's becoming very typical for those entities to form subsidiary entities to hold that property. Mm-hmm. If, in fact, that property is going to be used as a charitable endeavor and qualify for exemption, right now we have one choice to do that. It has to be a corporation. It can't be a limited liability company.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are plenty of those that exist.
Plenty of them. Do you know, did that thrift store pay property taxes ever, or did it
not as a,
hit you
not
quick
as a
enough?
Thrift store. In fact, it delayed the opening and of that enterprise to have to go back and reformat and recreate what they had done.
Hmm.
So I don't think it ever paid property taxes as a thrift store. The property may have paid property tax before the charity acquired it, and
yeah.
probably did. But
yeah, that's just a private business.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting policy question of when, and I'm on with Habitat for Humanity, and we have a similar for-profit. But I think it's a good policy question for us is, at that point, should they, if they're operating for-profit, pay and act like a business, which I guess is inherent in the question that you're putting forth before us.
Yeah, I think in my testimony I referred to the passage of the Model Not-for-Profit Act in 1991. We adopted that act. And that act moved Oregon and many states forward in its not-for-profit corporate laws by recognizing that where there's no policy purpose served by preventing a charity from doing business or availing itself of structures that for-profits use, there's no reason to prevent a charity from using that kind of a structure. And this is a case, I believe, where there is no public policy purpose served by preventing a charity from availing itself of a limited liability company form for its exempt property, but for the fact that we have a set of statutes that was passed long before there was a limited liability company. It simply doesn't refer to a limited liability company.
Mm-hmm. Senator Starr.
Yes, I. Very interesting testimony, and I'm involved as an officer in one of those nonprofits, so I guess I'm probably in a position here of having a conflict of interest. But as a nonprofit, we own four buildings, two of which are rented, and we're paying property taxes on the rented facilities. I see that as we have need for those facilities in the operation of our enterprise, we will file and become exempt on those properties, I believe. This looks like a very straightforward thing to me in the way it's written, that would provide opportunity to use a structure that's easier. So even though it may affect my little enterprise, which is a Christian school, I think that it's something that we really need to consider and probably move this bill forward at some point. I thank you for your testimony. It very helpful in understanding the issues, and we will be looking at this, I guess.
We're going to dig through it a little bit more with our staff. Yeah, I'm sure that shouldn't be, but we'll work with Mr. Manny and others to get good data in terms of what's out there. Other questions or comments for Senator Brzezinski?
Based on Mr. Manny, your testimony, if I understood it correctly, currently, a nonprofit can actually just create another nonprofit entity to hold the landholders and have everything done. And so this just basically takes out that step and gives another mechanism for this to be accomplished and keep it within the core of the nonprofit.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Other questions or thoughts? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Gail, do the counties, do y'all want to weigh in on this at all? Or? Oh, good. He's from Washington County Center, so he's our hometown guy. We give double weight to your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Jerry Hansen, Director of Assessment and Taxation at Washington County. to be honest with you, limited liability corporations have always been a little mysterious to me, and this has helped somewhat today to listen to the testimony. But I guess I also should say that I'm a board member on two nonprofit charitable corporations, and I understand some of the issues because of that, and just as a by way of disclosure. I think that this change from a corporate entity to a limited liability corporation would be considered a change of ownership in the statute for the property tax exemption, but I'm not totally positive about that. And I think we need to be clear that if a nonprofit does create a new limited liability corporation to own property, that it should be aware that it needs to file and a new application with the assessor and let us know what the use of the property is. I think otherwise there could be a lot of entities out there doing that sort of thing, not really realizing that they're jeopardizing their exemption because of the timeliness of filing, for one thing. And it's important for us to know the use of the property as well as the ownership. So,
thank you. Questions for our assessor in Washington County? Thank you. Appreciate the testimony.
Thank you.
Good luck with your two nonprofits. Anyone else? That's all we have for this bill. Anyone else wish to weigh in? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 283. We're going to do a little more work on that and should bring it back for more comment from the committee. Thank you for the work you've done, Mr. Manny. And with that, we are adjourned until Monday. It's Thursday, right? Yeah.